Thank you all. Please be seated. Well, good morning and welcome. We express our appreciation to BYU-Idaho staff who have made it so easy for us to be here today. Rex for holding the Idaho Supreme Court's one of our terms of court for November 2024. Today is the 7th of November, and we have a case entitled McInnis versus Madison County, Idaho, case number 50669, before us this morning. In this matter, the appellants are several, but Danielle McInnis is the primary appellant, represented by Laurel H. Sidaway, and assisted by Douglas J. Sidaway, who's appearing only in this case. For the respondent, Madison County, we have Blake Hall. And for respondents, S&S1 LLC and Yellowstone Safari Park LLC, we have John Sandquist. Good morning to each of you. We also have District Judge Rick Carnaroli sitting with us. Judge Carnaroli sits in Pocatello in the 6th Judicial District of Idaho. He will be sitting as a pro tem justice due to Justice Mueller's recusal in this case. Also, you will note that Justice Song is excused from this hearing today. She has other obligations for the court and was unable to make it to Rexburg. So she will fully participate by listening to the proceedings and assisting with the rest of us in reaching resolution of this matter. So with that, counsel, do any of you have preliminary matters for us before we hear our argument today?
No, Your Honor.
Very well, then. Consider what you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The petition for judicial review that was filed below was filed against one party, Madison County. It appealed one thing, a final decision the petitioners believed was made by the Board of Commissioners at a meeting on July 11, 2022. Our clients believed in 2022 that the board at that meeting somehow green-lighted and approved a proposed development of Yellowstone Safari Park, a commercial wildlife exhibition facility, as a game ranch and thereby as a permitted use in the agricultural zone in which it was located. Our clients alleged in their petition for judicial review that in violation of Idaho Code Section 67-6521, the commissioners made that decision without any written application, without making any records available, without a hearing, and without making any findings and conclusions, and they sought judicial review of those procedural errors by the county, by the commissioners.
What form did that decision take? Conclusions or anything?
Well, what they eventually discovered in response to their petition, Your Honor, is that the county came forward and said, you're mistaken. The board didn't make any decision. This was just a listening session. We were just hearing a report by the administrator of our planning commission on the history of what he knew about this project, which had yet to go forward, and no action was taken by the commissioners. The lead plaintiff, Danielle McInnis, had said in her supporting declaration with the court that her and her husband's home was located within a quarter mile north and a quarter mile east of the corner of the facility. And although the park had not yet been developed, she was concerned, she was apprehensive that when it was developed, it would bring in unwanted traffic, decrease residential property values, and threaten the safety of area children and livestock. Because the county presented evidence, however, that no action had been taken by the commissioners, it had simply accepted the planning administrator's representation that he was relying on the developer's plan to develop only a game ranch, Judge Boyce dismissed the petition. He dismissed the petition because no final decision had been made. In other words, that threshold requirement for judicial review, the making of a final decision by a governing body, had not happened, and therefore not only did our clients not have standing, but nobody would have had standing to appeal a non-action by the county commissioners. Now, interestingly, in reading Judge Boyce's decision that he issued in the case, another Judge Boyce case had been decided by you about 6 months earlier, and it's very interesting to read that case, the City of Ryrie versus Gilligan case. In that case, you held that the City of Ryrie did not have standing to seek judicial review of Jefferson County's granting of a conditional use permit for a mobile home because it had no interest in the subject property. But you said, and this is significant, I'm quoting from your opinion, you said, the city is not left without a remedy, but that remedy does not lie as an appeal within the APA or LUPA. Instead, the proper avenue for that for such relief would be for the city to file an original action. Such an action could seek declaratory relief under Idaho Code Section 10-1201. You then also went on to mention a LUPA remedy that the city would have had that doesn't apply to our case. In dismissing our client's petition for review, though, Judge Boyce used language very similar to the language you had used in the Gilligan case. He stated at page 12 of his decision dismissing our client's case that our clients had legitimate, his words, valid concerns, but he then stated at page 13 of his decision, quote, the court notes that petitioners are not foreclosed in seeking additional remedies to redress their concerns, end quote. Our clients accept the dismissal of their petition for review on the ground that they believe it was dismissed. They believe it was dismissed as they read Judge Boyce's opinion because the Board of Commissioners of Madison County made no decision on July 10th, 2022 at their meeting, and therefore our clients, nobody and not our clients would have any action for judicial review based on those circumstances. Our clients soon learned, however, that the county and Yellowstone Safari Park read Judge Boyce's decision very differently. Relying on language that appears at page 12 and 13 of his decision, that the threshold requirements for an injury in fact and final decision had not been met, they contend that Judge Boyce held that our clients lack standing to bring any challenge to the development and operation of the wildlife exhibition facility, even after it's built and operational.
So then what's the relief that you're asking from this court? I mean, when you read an opinion out of our court, the first thing that appears besides the party's names is, you know, the decision of the district court is affirmed, the decision of the district court is reversed, vacated, you know, the decreed language. And so what would this opinion look like?
I think what this court needs to do is construe Judge Boyce's opinion, and if you agree with the county and Yellowstone Safari Park, that he went beyond what he needed to decide. He went beyond the judicial review issue, reached out, speculated about some future civil action our clients might bring, and actually said, if Ms. McInnes and her co-parties try to bring a future civil action, they don't have standing in that action either. If you agree with our adversaries that Judge Boyce reached out and did that, then I think that part of his decision needs to be reversed, because that question was not before him. The only issue raised was our action for judicial review was an injury that we believe was caused by the county commissioners in greenlighting a particular development. We filed some additional authority a couple of weeks ago in which we pointed out that even though Yellowstone Safari Park was allowed to intervene in this action, it didn't change the nature of the action. It was still only an action against the county for judicial review for what the county did. We were complaining of an injury that the county caused by greenlighting a project. Well, it turns out the county never greenlighted the project, so we didn't have an action for judicial review. But that did not give Judge Boyce any basis for, as they argue, reaching out, anticipating that at some future date, we might try and bring a declaratory judgment action to challenge this action or to challenge the development, reach out and say in advance in an advisory opinion that if we tried to do that, we would lack standing. We don't think he said that. If you think he said that, then we think that part of his decision should be reversed. because as we argued in our opening brief, it would violate our client's due process rights for him to decide an issue that was never presented in the case. And moreover, it would be an advisory opinion on his part to reach out and decide that. When we argued in our opening brief that this is our adversary's broad construction of Judge Boyce's holding, they did not disagree. And I want to remind this court, because I think this is significant, the very first thing that we did, our clients did in this case, is make a motion for a temporary stay and ask you to remand the case to Judge Boyce so he could clarify what he was talking about when he said our clients had not suffered an injury in fact. As you know from the submissions that we filed in connection with that motion and the adversaries filed in response, we did, our clients did bring a deck action. And Judge Boyce is the judge on that action. And Judge Boyce held that our clients have standing in that action to pursue an action for declaratory relief and injunctive relief. And when we sought a stay from you so that this could be remanded and Judge Boyce could clarify what he meant in the opinion in this case, our adversaries both opposed, and they successfully opposed. They argued that you should hold on to the case and you should decide the inconsistency that they argued there was between the action, the decision in the declaratory judgment case and the decision in this case. And if I may, I'd like to quote from their opposition to our motion to stay and ask Judge Boyce to clarify, because I think it's important, the position they took in those, in that opposition. For instance, the county argued at page 6 of its brief opposing sending to Judge Boyce for clarification, quote, appellants were content to move forward with the appeal until the district court denied the county's motion to dismiss the new case, the deck action. As soon as that happened, appellants decided that there was good cause for the appeal to be stayed. Appellants' actions are an improper attempt to game the judicial system. They later concluded, this is the county, later concluded at page 7 and 8 of its opposition, quote, in the interests of judicial economy, this court should deny the motion to stay the appeal, should allow the appeal to proceed forward. This will not only resolve the confusion between the two cases, but could also prevent the need for future appeals of this issue. So they asked you to hold on to this case and decide what they perceive to be the alleged inconsistency between dismissing the judicial review action and allowing the deck action to proceed. Yellowstone Safari Park similarly made a similar argument. They argued that in July of 2023, the district court found that the appellants did in fact have standing to bring the deck action and that the district court did have jurisdiction to consider the case because appellants had satisfied the test to be exempt from the exhaustion of administrative remedies doctrine. Yellowstone Safari Park then continued at page 4 of its brief, as the district court has seemingly reached inconsistent conclusions with respect to the justiciability and jurisdiction issues in the judicial review case in the first action, which is now on appeal to this court, and the declaratory judgment in the second action, the answer is not to suspend the appeal proceedings or remand the case back to the trial court. They argued, quote, the advisable approach is to allow this initial case to run its natural course and reach a complete and definitive resolution. Again, as explained in our opening brief, we have no objection to the dismissal of our judicial review action. No decision was made. We accept that now. The county presented evidence that no decision was made. The injury we were complaining of, which was a county-imposed injury, a green lighting of the project, never happened. Nobody had standing in that case. We don't have a problem with that. Our problem is with our adversary's inconsistent reading of Judge Boyce's decision as saying, We have no ability at any time to pursue any kind of civil remedy complaining of the operation of this facility. With that, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal unless the court has other questions.
Is there no questions at this time? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, honorable members of the court, please, the court. Pleadings matter. And in this case, if the court looks at page 30 of the record, that is where you will find what the appellants in this case have argued that they are appealing. And I quote in paragraph 4 on page 30, the issue on appeal is whether the appellants have standing under LUPA to challenge Madison County's approval of a wildlife exhibit facility as a permitted agricultural use under its Unified Development Code. The memorandum decision and order concludes appellants did not have standing to challenge the county's approval of the facility because the county did not make an appealable final decision. With respect to the exhibition facility, and because appellant did not sustain an injury in fact, then they state, appellants contend this is an error. So what they are appealing to this court is a decision that Judge Boyce made that they did not have standing under LUPA and that there had been no final decision under LUPA. Therefore, a judicial appeal under LUPA is not proper and dismissed the action. Now, what you will not see today, what you will not hear today, is a single argument supporting that issue that they appeal. Quite to the contrary, what they point out throughout their brief, both their opening brief and their concluding brief, for example, in their opening brief, they state, this is a protective appeal. I've never heard of a protective appeal, but as you read through their argument, you'll reach the proper conclusion. What they mean by a protective appeal is we fully accept what Judge Boyce did in this case. We filed another case over here, and we'd like you to give us an advisory opinion as to whether or not what Judge Boyce said here and that we interpreted in this case in a certain fashion is binding and a different case that is not properly before this court. When a case is not properly before this court, one can only conclude that that is a request for an advisory opinion. And this court has made it clear throughout its history of exercising appropriate judicial restraint that we do not issue advisory opinions. So what you have is you look at their brief, and I can cite out of their appellate briefs on 7 different occasions where they say that we do not oppose the decision of the district court in as far as it dismissed our request for judicial review under LUPA. After all, remember, that is the issue that is actually properly before this court. Was Judge Boyce's decision correct, or should it be reversed? That decision was made under LUPA.
Now, I heard counsel to argue from your briefing regarding the motions that were filed before the court, though, earlier, that somehow your position is that it's not limited to LUPA, that there's no standing in any proceeding at all. Was her argument on that point correct?
Honorable counsel is attempting to do is to take the deck action and the pleadings that have been filed in the deck action and which are not part of the appeal in this decision. That's a separate case which may someday get to this court for interpretation and say, well, the position that they've taken in that decision that the county has taken in that case, that somehow this court should extrapolate that and assign that to the county in this case and make a ruling in this case that would bind the parties in a case that is not properly before the court.
But hold on a second, because as I understand the appellant's position, what they're concerned about is there's arguably two different bases upon which the district court ruled. One, no injury in fact. Two, no final decision. Dismissal is proper. And what they're saying is yes, we accept the dismissal, but we have two alternative bases, and if we don't challenge what we believe first, we don't think that's what Boyce said, but if he did say it, that there's no injury in fact, we don't want to have to be defending over in our deck action some kind of res judicata collateral estoppel type principle. We don't want to hear about it. We're bringing this action because we have an alternative ruling from the court, and we need to protect ourselves from that collateral estoppel or res judicata type argument. I mean, isn't that what's going on? And what, I guess at some level, I sort of understand it.
That is the only thing that is going on in that regard is if you conflate and combine the two cases. The other case isn't before this court.
Are there two bases upon which Judge Boyce ruled?
There are.
Okay, and what are those two bases?
That there had not been under a Rule 12 standing, that they did not establish, one, that there had been a final decision, and that alone is enough to dismiss the case under LUPA. And alternatively, he held that they did not have standing because they had not demonstrated in a judicial review proceeding that they had sustained any substantial harm. Now, they've subsequently filed a deck action. When they filed that deck action, the defendants in the deck action filed a Rule 12b motion to dismiss as well, and Judge Boyce ruled against the defendants, against Madison County, and against the intervener, and stated that, in fact, they did have standing based on a Rule 12b standard, which is a pretty low standard, as this court would acknowledge, that the pleadings, at least in the deck action, are adequate to establish that they may have suffered a actual harm.
Declaratory judgment actions don't require actual harm, do they?
Excuse me?
Declaratory judgment actions don't require actual harm. That's the whole point of a declaratory judgment action. You can bring a case in advance. For example, if you have a breach of contract dispute, you can bring an action to ask the court to construe a contract before anyone suffers any damages so that people can control the outcome of a dispute. That's the whole point of the statute. In fact, that's why it was enacted.
And Judge Boyce has already ruled in the deck action, which is not before this court, that they in fact do have standing. Now, he did so under a Rule 12b standard. Now, the parties are conducting discovery, and the court, at some subsequent date, that deck action will be resolved by Judge Boyce, and at that point, the parties will have an opportunity to appeal to this court, and if that may be a long ways down the road, and this court will then be given the opportunity to weigh in on an actual controversy that is properly before this court as to whether or not Judge Boyce's rulings on that issue, as well as all of the other rulings that he may render in that case, were correct or incorrect. That isn't the issue that was appealed in this case. That isn't, I mean, we can only go by what they have stated is the issue that they've appealed, which is, as I previously read to you, is that Judge Boyce erred in dismissing their case under LUPA. But they don't, but now they argue that he didn't err. When, one, they concede that he didn't err, and that there was, in effect, no basis for this, for them to then proceed with an appeal in the judicial review case, because they have a deck action pending. So now we are here before this court arguing that, from both sides, that Judge Boyce did not err in dismissing the judicial review. When both sides agree that Judge Boyce did not err in dismissing the judicial review, the proper thing for the appellants to have done in this case would have been to voluntarily dismiss this action and allow the deck action to proceed, and then whenever it is resolved, one or more of the parties to that action can appeal to this court and ask for a ruling based on an actual record that would be before this court. Today, this court has no record before it at all, because the appellants did not request a record to be provided to this court. Not in the judicial review case that they actually appealed. And they did request to take actions out of the record out of the deck action and file a motion to have that incorporated into this case. And this court properly denied that motion because it would be premature for this court to attempt to wade in on an action that is still pending before the district court with no final decision and issue an advisory decision, which is what they're really asking this court to do. There's no record that's been developed. So whether or not there has been any harm or not, what the respective rights of the parties under the Madison Code, that hasn't been developed. It hasn't been developed because that action is still pending before the court. What is before this court is an appeal of its decision to dismiss the judicial review, which they now freely admit was properly granted. Once they did that, instead of dismissing their appeal, they're asking this court to speculate with no record before it that Judge Boyce's determination in the judicial review case, which also had no record before it because there had been no final decision, no findings of facts, no conclusions issued by the county, that somehow based on no record either in the judicial review case and no record before this court in the deck action, that this court should somehow issue an advisory opinion saying that we hereby declare that we are capable of interpreting Judge Boyce's decision without any record and give an advisory opinion. In preparing for this.
Is the Armstrong report part of the record? I mean, I looked for it. I wanted to read it, but I guess it's not before this court, right?
That is correct. There is no record before this court. Now, it is the duty of the appellant to put before this court whatever record they deem is appropriate and necessary for this court to render a decision. And this court, to its own surprise, when they saw that there was no record before the court, sent out notice to the appellant and said, we don't have a record. Do you want to supplement the pleadings? And this was after all the briefing was done. And provide us with an actual record. And the response was no. Well, the reason I believe that the answer is no is because in spite of the fact they're appealing Judge Boyce's decision as being in error, they haven't assigned a single error to that decision. And in fact, as I said, on at least 7 occasions throughout their initial brief and their rebuttal brief, they have said, we agree with Judge Boyce, and we read it in a certain fashion. But it's possible that someone else could read it in a different fashion. And if someone else reads it in a different fashion, if, then there could be a different result in the deck action. So we want this court, without any record and without us assigning any error whatsoever to the decision of Judge Boyce, to reach an advisory opinion and tell Madison County and the appellants and the intervener that we hereby have the ability to divine without any record what Judge Boyce's decision meant, even though both sides agree that his decision stands. Now, Judge Boyce, in the deck action, which is not properly before you, held that they did have standing. At some point, this court will have an opportunity to determine whether that was right or wrong with an actual record that is before the court. You have no such record today upon which to make such a finding.
Is your client asserting, as a result of the decision that is before us today, asserting that any argument regarding standing has already been determined, that is, that there's a reclusive effect of the decision that Judge Boyce has issued?
Well, interestingly enough, Your Honor, when the plaintiff quoted from the alleged page 6 of our brief, that was not from our appellate brief. That was from a brief in the deck action, which is not part of your record and is not part of what is before the court. So it's a little hard for me to sit back and say, well, for the first time in these proceedings, quoting from a record that is not part of the proceedings before this court, tell us what your response is. Now, we believe that the issue of standing is a proper issue to raise before the court in the deck action. Judge Boyce has ruled on that issue, and he has ruled against us.
I understand that, but my question was, are you arguing any type of preclusive effect as a result of the decision that is before us today?
We may at some future date, we argued in the deck action that that was the case, and we may argue that at some future date in an appeal of that deck action, when and if it ever is appealed. But that is not an issue that is properly before this court. The mere fact that we think that Judge Boyce's decision...
But doesn't Judge Boyce's decision, if the appellant doesn't challenge it here today with us in this context, doesn't Judge Boyce's decision... Again, there's some question of how to read it. But if, in fact, he made the alternative ruling that there was no injury in fact, doesn't that become the final decision?
It became the final decision in the case that is before this court, the judicial review.
Right.
Now he has ruled otherwise in the deck action. And he did so under a 12B standard, not under a summary judgment standard, after the facts have been developed. And so under a summary judgment decision standard, he may reach the same conclusion that he already has, or he may reach a different conclusion, and then you will have a record before you, and then you will be able to properly evaluate his decision rather than attempting to issue an advisory decision, which is what the appellants are requesting today, an advisory decision with no assignment of error and no record before you.
No assignment of error because there was an alternative ruling. Right? There were two different rulings, either of which would support the dismissal.
That is correct.
And you are asserting preclusive effects as a result of the alternative ruling in other cases.
We are not making that argument in this case that is before this court.
But I asked you, are you making that argument? And you said yes.
We did make that in a case that is not before this court.
Right.
And for this court to violate its own principles of judicial restraint and not issue an advisory opinion, this court should refrain from making any such decision until this court has a full record before it in the other case.
Now, the record's a different issue, but I'm just asking the basic question. If you have alternative rulings, one of which is correct, one of which may not be correct, and you don't want to be bound by an incorrect decision, doesn't the appellant at that point in time have to bring this appeal?
They have not brought this appeal on that basis. Their pleading is very clear. And in fact, nowhere in their decision or in their briefing have they argued that Judge Boyce's decision in this case before this court was, they don't assign any error to it. And we didn't appeal, so we haven't assigned any error to it. And so how this court can then say, with both sides agreeing, that Judge Boyce made a proper decision in this case, that we somehow should issue an advisory decision as to what his decision in this case means in some other case where, that is not properly before us and for which there is no record. I've used all of my time, and I wanted to leave my co-counsel an opportunity to respond to any questions. Thank you very much.
Madam Clerk, so it's clear, how much time does the co-respondent have for me?
Thank you.
We had a moment where the clock was on showing time. I apologize for that, but it appears to be accurate now.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I would like to address, I represent the interveners in this case, SNS 1 and Yellowstone Safari Park, and I think our perspective is important as citizens, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But I do want to address Justice Brody's questions raised about this idea that there are two separate decisions by Judge Boyce, one that we all are in agreement of and one relating to harm that may become an issue in the deck action because of a res judicata reading of this decision. But I think it would be helpful to clarify. In Judge Boyce's decision on page 9, he said the dispositive issue in this case is whether petitioners have sufficiently alleged an injury in fact that is causally connected to the complained of conduct. And if so, that any such injury can be redressed by this court. To establish an injury in fact, the injury must be concrete and particularized and actual and imminent, not conjectural or hypothetical. And then he says, in addition, the claims in the petition are brought under LALUPA, right? 67, chapter 65. So when Judge Boyce in his decision says there is no standing because there was no action by the county and therefore no one could have been harmed because there was no action. You know, in a personal injury case, there's a car accident, there's an action, and there's a harm. In this case, the judge said there was no decision by the county, and therefore no one can claim an injury because there was no car accident. There was no decision by the county, therefore there is no injury. And the appellants want to use a different reading and say, well, we are injured, we're going to file a deck action, we might ask for damages, and we might have an injury. But that injury would be a separate and distinct injury that they suffered in a separate and distinct case, not an injury in the deck action that they suffered because the county made a mistake or the county didn't issue a decision. So I think it's important that we don't separate injury and action. And it's not the action of Yellowstone Safari Park that caused an injury that Judge Boyce was talking about. We weren't even in business at the time. We weren't injuring anyone because we were still in process of putting up fences and doing all the things. So Judge Boyce did not mean that Yellowstone Safari Park caused them injury. He meant the county did not cause appellants any injury because they did not make a decision under LALUPA. So I don't know if that helps clarify things, but I think the wording on page 9 really does help clarify that. I would like, as an intervener and a citizen, I think it's important that we underscore that these types of discussions between my client and appellant with the county should not create lawsuits where people who disagree with the county sue for judicial review. When my client went to the county and talked to them about the zoning, answered questions, confirmed that this was a properly zoned activity, and started his project. And then the neighbors, and particularly the first named appellant, based on false assumption and baseless fears, decides that she's going to oppose this project. She and her group go into the county and they have a listening session and they talk through things. And Mr. Armstrong creates a report to explain why the county has taken this position. These discussions are very important. They're not official actions. But I think if we were to allow judicial review of non-LLUPA actions, it would certainly break down the healthy communications that's needed between citizens and their counties. And so as the appellants received an answer they did not like, certainly they're entitled to file a deck action and we can address those issues there. But Judge Boyce was correct in saying there was no decision by the county. In fact, there was no application to the county. We need to stick with the processes in the APA, where the Administrative Procedure Act says, look, file an application, we'll have an open meeting, we'll file notice, we'll have an open meeting, we'll create minutes from that meeting, and we'll issue a final decision that's appealable within the administration. And if you've reached all of your administrative remedies, then you can go to the courts for help.
I appreciate your interpretation of the judge's decision on page 9. I think that's helpful. I would ask you this. Is your client's interpretation of Judge Boyce's decision on the issue of injury in fact and not having a final action, is it consistent with what the county has asserted?
Well, we stand by the fact that the appellants have not been injured and that there's no injury in fact. We will argue that and have argued that in the deck action, and that will be an issue for that case.
Right, I understand, but I'm just asking about the interpretation of the decision. Does your client in the county, do they read the judge's decision the same way?
I'm not sure I know exactly how the county's reading it. I know that we read it in a way that says there's no injury created by the county by its actions, and that the injury in fact requirement is part of the LLUPA statute. And so as Judge Boyce limited his analysis and review of this case, he was looking at the Administrative Procedures Act and LLUPA to say, no decision underneath, you didn't go through the process, and therefore no injury in fact. So we will contend that appellants were not injured by any county action in this case, and we will contend that the appellants have not been injured in the deck action separately. We'll argue both, but we are not going to argue res judicata in the other case, that the court's dismissal of the judicial review case has a res judicata effect on injury, because it's a different type of injury, and we will be consistent that there's no injury under either scenario. So I think it's important that as citizens that I think that this court agrees, the Administrative Procedures Act and the process to exhaust administrative remedies is a threshold question that Judge Boyce got correctly, and that any attempt to run to the courts, go to the courts for county actions outside of that act should be dismissed, because we want to communicate with these administrators. We want to go in and say, hey, here are our plans. This is what we're going to do. Do you see any violations of law? And then we proceed. And this idea that the county somehow gave us a green light is a red herring. We have a green light until the county issues a red light. We have fundamental property rights to use our property however we want, unless limited by law, a zoning ordinance, or some kind of restriction. So for the appellants to flip it and say, the county gave us a green light during these meetings, we went into the county and the county said, go ahead and do what you want, that is not the perspective that we should have here in Idaho. The green light is always on. We can do whatever we want with our property unless and until there's a violation of law, and these laws are set forth in LLUPA you know, they're public, and we go through the process, and our elected officials tell us how our land is limited. But unless it's limited specifically, we always have the green light. So as the court analyzes this, we would ask that it keep that perspective. The green light is always on unless there's a restriction enumerated in law. And for that reason, I would ask that the court affirm Judge Boyce's decision. I think it was well-reasoned, and we appreciate your time. I personally appreciate the court and staff and the bailiffs, everyone traveling. I think it's important for us here in Eastern Idaho to participate in these processes, so I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jenkins. Madam Clerk, how much time does the appellant have remaining?
17 minutes.
Thank you.
Hopefully I won't need it all, and I'm sure if I don't need it all, you'd be happy if I don't use it all. So I want to respond briefly first to Mr. Stanquist's argument about the confusion about what happened. And I want to point out, and I think this is clear from what you've seen in the judge's recount of the history, our clients were not represented by counsel at the time that they had their meetings in 2022 in May, June, and attended the meeting in July. They were left, and I believe Mr. Summers, I believe the principal of Yellowstone Safari Park, was also left with the impression that there was some kind of administrative green lighting of his proposal at that meeting. I think the parties, the lay parties, came away from that meeting with the feeling that something had been approved. And as it turned out, when we filed our petition for review and we saw the county's evidence, it turned out that the county had not taken formal action. So, yes, there was confusion. I don't think it was wrongdoing on our client's part to draw the conclusion they drew, because I think Mr. Summers drew the same conclusion. But it was clarified later that the county had not made any decision. When Mr. Hall was up here and he was quoting what we were appealing, I was curious what he was quoting, and I believe he must have been quoting the long preliminary statement of issues that we included in our notice of appeal. But I believe if you read our opening brief, it's very clear that we have always accepted Judge Boyce's decision that he could dismiss the judicial review action because no decision was made. We have no problem with that. So I think by quoting that, I think he accurately quoted one of the preliminary statements of issues in our notice of appeal, but I think it's clear from our opening brief that that is not an issue that we raised in our opening brief. As a matter of fact,
I'd like to interrupt. In reviewing your reply brief, you made this comment. I think I'm quoting this correct. I don't have a page number. This court has a, quote, need to resolve a disagreement about the basis for Judge Boyce's dismissal order. Seems to me resolving disagreements is what deck actions are for. This court's an error correcting court. We're not a resolve disagreements court. So can you tell me how we are to resolve disagreements about what order means when you've admitted that it's correct insofar as Lewis is concerned?
Well, but we believe there are two possible constructions of the order. And we have to take seriously the other side's construction of the order, because if we don't appeal it now, if they're right and we don't appeal it now, it's binding on us. And, you know, to be clear about this, and I think you have this in both parties' submissions, we were challenged in the deck action that this case decided we have no standing. That issue has been preserved in the deck action. So as Mr. Hall suggested, maybe someday down the road, if we proceed with the deck action and our clients are 100% successful in the deck action, they will then appeal this issue. And it is true that if they appeal it then, we will be able to argue, no, look, read the opinion. It reasonably only says that we didn't have standing to seek judicial review. That's all it's talking about. But if they argue, as they have argued, that it went further than that, and it precluded us from having standing in any action, they've preserved that error, and we've lost the chance to appeal it because we didn't appeal it here. We have to, if that's what they contend that the order says, and that is what they contend the order says, we have to appeal that erroneous reading of the order now, or we will forever lose the ability to appeal that. And I want to point out that when we filed our opening brief and we accused them of taking the position that that's what the order said, that it very broadly reached out and said, not only do you not have standing in this action, but you will never have standing in any action to challenge this project. They could have disagreed with that. When they filed their response briefs, they could have said, no, you misunderstand us. We recognize that it was a narrow decision by Judge Boyce, but it only addressed your standing in a judicial review action. We would have been thrilled to see that response because at that point, we would have moved to dismiss the appeal. We would have no reason to bring the appeal but for their position that they are taking, that a fair reading of Judge Boyce's decision is not only, Ms. McInnes and others, do you not have standing to appeal the judicial review decision, but you will never have standing, you have no injury, you will never have standing to challenge this project. So, as we tried to point out in our reply brief, we have to raise this. It is protective in the sense that we actually, I mean, in fairness, we have to tell you what we think Judge Boyce said. And we think, read as a whole, his decision is really only talking about the injury that we had alleged in the petition for judicial review was created by the commissioners if they green-lighted this project, if they, through a zoning amendment or through a conditional use permit or whatever. Our clients didn't understand exactly what they did. But if they somehow green-lighted this project and said, this is a good project in the agricultural zone, you know, that was the injury we were complaining of in the judicial review action. And that is the only injury we were complaining of, a county-caused injury that Judge Boyce held, we believe, was not actionable because no decision was made. There was no injury.
So then if I understand what you're saying, your interpretation, your client's interpretation of Judge Boyce's decision is aligned with the view that Mr. Stankwist laid out in terms of Yellowstone Safari.
You know, as he just argued it now, quite frankly, when I read their response brief, that's not the way I read their response brief. And you'll see in our reply, I think there's one section of their response brief where they not only rely on that injury in fact language, but they actually talk in their response brief about how the county made the right decision because this is actually a game ranch. So from their response brief, I believe that they were on the same page as the county, but I will agree with you that based on what Mr. Stankwist just said now, it sounds like his reading of the decision is the same as ours. It's a very narrow decision, and if you agree with us that it's a very narrow decision, we're good. It's only if you construe it as being the judge reaching out, anticipating future lawsuits, anticipating future civil actions, and saying to us, in this case, with no basis, with no notice, with no due process, that we're going to lose that future lawsuit, that would have been improper. And frankly, we make two arguments in our opening brief why that would be improper. We said it would be improper because it would deprive our clients of due process because they had no notice that was an issue in the first action. And also because it would be an advisory opinion by Judge Boyce to reach out and say, not only do you not have standing here, but I'm going to look into the future and tell you you're never going to have standing. That would be wrong. And interestingly, neither of our adversaries responded to those arguments in our opening brief at all. They haven't addressed those whatsoever. So I guess I have nothing more to say about that. But we did make both of those arguments in our opening brief. So Justice Brody, I think based on your questions, I think you totally understand our position. Our concern is that as our adversaries and, you know, our very experienced adversaries, Mr. Hall, longtime land use attorney, Mr. Stankwist, you know, well-established attorney with, you know, the Parsons Bailey firm, which is a regionally recognized firm as experts on land use. We have to take that. We have to take seriously what we perceive to be their reading of this decision. And if we think that that Judge Boyce did make a mistake by reaching out and deciding something he shouldn't have decided, then we need to, we need, now is our only opportunity to correct that problem. So, as I say, if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I think I've said all I wanted to say.
Okay. Oops, there are no other questions.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Counselor. With that, this matter is under advisement, and the court will render a decision again after Justice Song is available to meet with us in that regard. Obviously, the work remains ahead of us. For now, we will be in recess until approximately 10 a.m.
All rise, please.